Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news, all relating to the economic hostage crisis on Capitol Hill that shows some signs of being resolved before Social Security checks have to go out on Wednesday. An expert on government, Paul Light, joins us to discuss how the Republicans seem to have won in spite of having manufactured this crisis to achieve their policy goals through extortion by threatening to damage an already weak economy which the Democrats will be running on next year. Then we'll get an overseas perspective on how this self-inflicted economic wound looks like from abroad. The director of Columbia University's Earth Institute, Jeffrey Sachs, joins us to assess what seems to be a suicide pact that President Obama is expected to sign, an austerity package that will kill our faltering economic recovery and undermine the foundation of the Democratic Party, leading to the likelihood of third parties and primary challenges emerging next year. Then we'll look at the moral questions raised by the actions of a few wealthy white men who call themselves Christians, who are about to unnecessarily impoverish millions of their fellow Americans in order to form a more perfect disunion. Jim Wallace, the CEO of Sojourners and author of Rediscovering Values on Wall Street, Main Street, and Your Street, joins us to shine a light on this hypocrisy, meanness, and ideological cruelty. Joining us now is Paul Light, who is the Paulette Goddard Professor of Public Service at New York University and the founding principal investigator of the Global Center for Public Service. Previously, he served as the founding director of the Center for Public Service and director of the Governmental Studies Program at the Brookings Institution. His books include Thickening Government and The Tides of Reform. Welcome to Background Briefing, Paul Light.
Thank you for having me.
And I guess at this point, what's the latest in the Capitol Hill follies here, Paul Light? I take it that now the Senate's voted down the Speaker's proposal, Harry Reid's proposal?
Well, the Senate voted down the Majority Leader's proposal, but that appears to be a precursor for further negotiations that might lead to a package. You have to defeat everything before you clear the decks to pass something. So you've got to give everybody a voice in expressing their ideological position, which we saw in the House, now we've seen in the Senate, and perhaps you now set the stage for some serious negotiating that has probably been underway for 24 to 72 hours.
And we know little about it. We've known little about it all along, and there's been a lot of speculation, and I think you have to always have that caveat. But what we know from David Plouffe, the senior advisor to Mr. Obama, and he, of course, is his election guru, who is looking towards the 2012 elections. He said that the package includes $1 trillion in cuts and would set up a congressional commission that would report to Congress in the fall with a plan for additional changes amounting to $1 trillion or more. Is that your understanding?
That's my understanding. I think the American public and the international community will look at it and say, you know, this is some sort of Rube Goldberg mechanism for trying to get something done that might actually impress the global financial markets, but I'm not sure it will. You're just passing buck to a congressional committee that may or may not be able to act. And there's been a long history of these kinds of commissions that have produced exactly nothing in terms of actual results.
And in terms of what has been up until now a bottom line for the president and for the Democrats, which is revenues, there's no indication there are any revenues in the package.
Not that I can see, but you don't know what's happening in the private negotiations around coming up with that $1 trillion figure. Perhaps they'll get something, but it's doubtful. John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, cannot deliver votes to actually increase revenues, close loopholes, or adjust the alternative minimum tax, as we call it, to produce any kind of useful revenue enhancements. So basically what's happened is that the Democrats are folding to the Republican House because the House is proven repeatedly in the past 3 or 4 weeks that it will not pass a balanced agreement. And by balance, we're really defining the term down to mean maybe 80% spending cuts and 20% revenue enhancements. I mean, that doesn't sound like balance to me, but that's how the term has been defined here, maybe 90-10. So I don't think Boehner can deliver his numbers. I don't think that the House will pass any revenue enhancers. They're going to cut spending.
And the House is staying firm on maintaining the tax breaks for the 1%, the wealthiest Americans.
I think that's a reasonable way of putting it. Yes, you know, revenues are essentially left untouched, and there's a lot of accounting gimmickry and where the deficit cuts come from. I don't know whether the emerging package will include cuts or savings related to the wind down of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, which our Congressional Budget Office, the office responsible for scoring savings, there's some indication that they will not score the wind down as a cut. And therefore, the question will be, well, what's really in a package of cuts, and are they real?
Again, I'm speaking with Paul Light, who is the Paulette Goddard Professor of Public Service at New York University, and he served as the founding director of the Center for Public Service and director of the Governmental Studies Program at the Brookings Institution. And obviously the president made an attempt to shame the Republicans by talking about corporate jets, subsidies and tax breaks, and how the Republicans were going to the mat for the millionaires and billionaires. That hasn't worked. But polls indicate that most Americans think that the disparity in wealth in this country is alarming and growing, that they don't think this is a fair situation. So what does it say about our democracy? We're a small minority of insurgents who were formed. The Tea Party was formed as a result of outrage over what happened on Wall Street, but they've turned out to be the most zealous defenders of I don't know whether you could say Wall Street, but they're certainly the most zealous defenders of billionaires.
Well, I think that's true. I think there are a lot of Democrats who are also diehard defenders of upper income earners in the United States. I think that President Obama made a modest attempt to explain this problem to Americans, but I don't think he laid enough detail on the table to make the case. Yes, Americans think that the wealthiest in this country are undertaxed, but the corporate jet example has not particularly penetrated the consciousness. The public is generally supportive of revenue increases of one kind or another, but the devil is always in the details, and Republicans have managed to stake out the higher ground, arguing that any tax increase, even closing the loophole on corporate jets, will somehow destroy the economy, and that's been the prevailing wisdom in the House. People have locked themselves in on it, and you cannot get a bill through the House with any kind of revenue enhancer. You just can't. And they have proven, the House has proven this over and over. The Democrats are folding right now in order to get the debt ceiling raised, and that's just what's going to happen, I think. But we still don't know the fine point in the Harry Reid's proposal. We don't know what the minority leader, Mitch McConnell, will do, but I suspect that revenues are not going to be part of this, that the House will just tear it apart. They're willing to put the economy in jeopardy in order to make their case.
Well, you would think, though, given that that is obvious, Paul Light, it is extraordinary to think that the Republicans have won on the policy grounds. They've gotten what they wanted, or they appear to be about to get what they want, and yet they haven't suffered a catastrophic blow in terms of public opinion. It seems that Well, in part, I think the problem is the way our media is structured, where everything is equal and opposite, you know, where you have to have the pro and con. So therefore, you know, they're equal arguments, if you will, even though it's only one side that is threatening to destroy the economy if they don't get 100% of what they want. That doesn't seem to be coming across. I think what's coming across to the American people is that these people on Washington who are supposed to be doing the people's business are absolutely out of control, and the public are just disgusted.
I think that's a good summary of it. I think that the legislative process in the United States is very, very cumbersome, difficult to understand. The maneuvering is difficult to follow. It's all been front and center in the media coverage. It's been treated as a horse race kind of event. Republicans were first to the floor with a proposal. They passed it. They passed a balanced budget amendment. They will claim that they made the first moves, that the president was slow to engage, et cetera, et cetera. So they have a slight edge on this. I think Americans are just disgusted with, you know, Washington. And I think Obama gets hurt. I think Democrats get hurt, but I think, you know, Republicans and incumbents from all of the parties get hurt in this. And I suspect that you'll see a very large number of people nominated next year who will basically be out of a, you know, Washington needs to be reformed kind of position, and that'll be more Tea Party activists, I would guess. Possibly a third party effort, you know, to basically say both parties don't work. You get a candidate who's going to make the case that he or she is not of Washington and therefore they can fix it. But third-party movements have been notoriously poorly financed and unsuccessful. Our system is configured to produce a two-party system and to knock out third-party candidates with relative ease.
Well, that doesn't mean, though, Paul Light, that a third party can't act as a spoiler, as Ralph Nader did in 2000 in Florida, helping elect George W. Bush. And it seems very likely that there will be a third, a challenge to Obama from his left. Don't you think?
You know, but a third party built around changing Washington would probably carve more into the Republican base than the Democratic base. Obama may face a challenge from the left. He may face a challenge from his own right, you know, centrist Democrats. It's going to be independent voters in this country that are going to determine the next election, and it's not yet clear which party they'll side with or whether they'll go with the third party. And I would guess that a third party candidate with enough credibility and a strong message might get 8-10% of the vote in the 2012 election, and that would be enough to change the outcome quite significantly. I wouldn't bet on Obama right now. I think he's in a very weak position. The economy is struggling. He's going to have to run with an economy with 9-10% unemployment. He's not looking real good right now, and I don't know how he can shift the debate away from the economic issue and onto the debt ceiling debate. This one will be forgotten relatively quickly, but the anger will continue, and that may favor a strong third party, and I would guess right now that Obama is quite vulnerable if the Republicans nominate somebody with enough credibility to make the anti-Washington case.
So what explains then how did the Republicans win by threatening to ruin the economy? Is it that cynical that a bad economy helps them?
I think yes, actually. I think that Obama was able for the first 2 years of his presidency to blame the economic conditions on his predecessor, George W. Bush, but it's his economy now. And Republicans are basically saying, look, you know, we've got to get our credit card in order here. They've used the credit card analogy effectively to say that you can't get your credit card under control, without cutting your purchases. They've just been more effective on the issue. Obama has had a very sophisticated argument, but it often comes across as professorial when he presents it. And I don't think most Americans quite understand how he got into this mess. I don't think they quite understand much beyond the fact that Washington's leaders have been behaving like anything but courageous leaders. So it's kind of a pox on everyone's house, and that invites a third party, that invites activists on the left and right during the nomination season. It's going to be quite a ride over the next 18 months or so.
And Paul Light, what explains the ability of the Republicans to leverage power the way that they do? For example, they are the minority in the Senate, but for the longest time, they've held this new rule that there's no such thing as a majority vote anymore. That it's got to be a supermajority with a filibuster proof.
How do they do it?
How do they get away with it? You're a student of government. What's the psychology here, or the lack thereof, on the Democratic side to accede to this usurpation of power?
Well, the U.S. system of government was designed to favor strong minorities in these kinds of debate, especially in the Senate with the filibuster. This is a government that was designed by our founders to not work very well. It was not supposed to produce grand policy agreements without intense public support and intense majority support, far exceeding the 50% plus one rule that we're all accustomed to. So here we have a system that's easily exploited through checks and balances. We got a leader in the House who cannot control his own troops. We saw that in the wild battle for simple passage of a relatively small bill the other night. Finally did win passage, but it was it was a squeaker. But this is a system that's easily exploited for advantage by a very strong House or a very reluctant Senate. And it's just the way the system was designed, but it's very easily exploited. That was the hope by the founders, incidentally. They didn't want things to pass regularly. They wanted there to be, lots of checks and balances and leverage points. And the Republicans have done a very good job with their message on the debt ceiling and marshaling their troops to extort concessions, and the Democrats have basically folded. They're basically saying, okay, we can't get any revenue enhancements, so we'll give Republicans $1.5 trillion, maybe a little bit more, in benefit cuts, spending cuts. And some of them will be real, some of them won't be real.
Mm. It sounds like a political version of the Stockholm Syndrome, where you're nice to your torturer, you know?
Well, that could be it, or it could be a political version of waiting for Godot. I do think something will pass at 11:59 and 59 seconds on PM on August 1st. The American public, I think by that point and already to this point, are just fed up with it. And Washington couldn't be more unpopular. Congress is the most unpopular, but that's not what's going to play out in the coming elections. Republicans, I think, have it right that the public will support them and that the public's intense dislike of taxes will help Republicans in the coming election season.
Boy, it just makes you realize when Obama came in with that big majority the Democrats had, that was the time to strike, and they didn't do it. They didn't have a big enough stimulus, and they allowed the Republicans to cut the stimulus down 40% with tax breaks, and then the Republicans, after negotiating with them, didn't give them one vote. If that didn't tell him out of the gate what's going on, I don't know what it takes, but.
Right. At the time, it was basically the Republicans sitting around saying, well, you know, how can we set the stage for 2012 and 2010? And the answer was, we'll oppose everything and we'll stay in line. And at the time, many pundits were saying, well, this is not going to work, Democrats are going to get their stimulus, et cetera, et cetera. But it wasn't, as you say, it wasn't big enough, and joblessness has remained very, very high. And maybe that was the time to strike with a much larger stimulus and then hold off on health care reform until 2013. But Democrats went ahead. Republicans won a major victory in 2010, and I think they're playing it out, saying, well, what worked in 2010 will work in 2012, and they may be right.
Well, it is it's an extraordinary situation, I must say, to see something that seemed to me to be so out of control, just to be such flagrant kind of extortion, and such an unnecessary and reckless thing to do, to threaten the full faith and credit of the United States,
and to get
away with it.
Well, I, you know, look, I've been watching this from inside Washington and out. I was on Capitol Hill as a fellow for several years in the 80s during the Social Security crisis, when leaders stepped up and did what was for the good of the nation, not necessarily for their own electoral advantage. I've never seen anything like this. It is the most damaging moment of the last 6-8 weeks, the most damaging moment for public confidence in government that I have ever seen, and I think most people who watch this would agree. You know, in terms of public confidence in government, the consent of the governed, I think that we're hitting new lows, and I think it'll take a long time for the public to gain any confidence toward Washington. It's just going to take a generation, perhaps, to recover from this kind of mess. It's not just what's in the package, it's how the negotiations have gone forward. It's been, really, if I can use the word, just a disgusting display of Washington's inability to reach consensus on an issue of obvious national concern.
Well, so Paul Light, I thank you for joining us here today. It's a
absolutely my pleasure.
And again, I've been speaking with Paul Light, who is the Paulette Goddard Professor of Public Service at New York University, previously was Director of Governmental Studies Program at the Brookings Institution. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be joined by Jeffrey Sachs.
You pray.